potential migrants from the Aegean coast, possibly towards Greece, in order to enter the European Union.
5 years ago, I was on the other side of this channel trying to cross it.
The number one issue in British politics was immigration. It was concerns over open borders.
I'm Professor Jules Pretty. This is Louder Than Words, the pod from the University of Essex.
I'm journalist Martha Dixon. In this episode, we're putting migration under the spotlight.
I arrived in the UK at the age of 10 with my family, and we came on a boat.
There are over 270 million international migrants in the world today.
And figures are rising, meaning they're often in the news. The World Economic Forum states that in the last 50 years, migrant numbers have tripled.
The actual volume of numbers of people displaced is just staggering.
We'll be revealing unique research that has been uncovering the impact of migration, both on the land and on the people.
It's rather like a shattering of the psyche, which is then has to be reassembled.
And we'll hear about efforts to help migrants connect with a lost past.
So here are the photos that we're going to use. Do you remember them?
That's Grandma, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was that in Brixton?
That was in Brixton. So we're going.
Novelist and artist Roma Tern has only three photos to show her daughter of her past life, arriving in London from war-torn Sri Lanka at the age of 10.
Is that you?
That's me outside the house.
That's in Sri Lanka?
That is outside the house in Sri Lanka, yes. And this is your grandfather with me, also in Sri Lanka.
This one I used in a column.
I was born in Colombo and I moved with my parents to the UK in the 1960s. We were fleeing the impending war in Sri Lanka. My father being a Tamil and my mother being a Sinhalese, there was conflict going on between the two ethnic groups. We arrived in Britain and moved to London, where we lived and where my parents lived for the rest of their life.
Where was this taken? Southampton?
No, that's the boat train coming from Southampton.
Yeah.
And it's coming into Waterloo, and there's Grandma, and there's me.
Oh, look at her sari.
Yes.
What colour was this? Is black and white. What colour?
I can't remember. I think it was sort of browns and greens. Mm. And I remember that I was wearing a blue dress. That I do remember.
Do you remember that day?
Yes, 5th of August, 1963. Look, you can see the hair, people with their back-combed hair.
Mm.
It's interesting. And you used that one, didn't you? During the journey, we lost most of our family photographs. We came on a boat and the journey took 21 days. It was rather horrendous, looking back on it, although at the time I was quite excited. And it was only later, much later, when I was an adult and an artist, that I realised what this loss actually meant.
Roma has now written several books about her family leaving their homeland.
Her art also reflects departed memories, including her latest project with migrants called Lost Luggage.
Lost Luggage is a rather unusual exhibition, really. It's the result of an ongoing conversation over years between myself and my daughter Molly, and we're both visual artists. And it came about as a result of the fact that we only have three photographs of the past, the house I used to live in, the garden that my father tended. And for political reasons, I'm not going back to Sri Lanka. We're working with refugees from the Gatwick Detainee Refugee Council. We are working with asylum seekers, immigrants, to make an imagined archive of what they've lost.
This sense of loss within migration is felt sharply with the steep rise in the movement of people over the last half a century.
But of course, migration and loss are not new issues.
Michael, a pastoral poem by William Wordsworth. If from the public way you turn your steps up the tumultuous brook of Greenhead Gill, you will suppose that with an upright path your feet must struggle in such bold ascent, the pastoral mountains front you face to face. But courage. So I'm Susan Oliver. I'm a professor in literature and environmental humanities at the University of Essex. My work is mainly on late 18th and 19th century literature, and I'm particularly interested in the way that novelists and poets recovered the way that people thought about their relationship with the land and with place. Now, that obviously includes the way that people were often forced or sometimes chose to leave places in which they lived and to leave the land on which their families may have lived for many centuries and made a hidden valley of their own. No habitation can be seen, but they who journey thither find themselves alone with a few sheep, with rocks and stones and kites that overhead are sailing in the sky. It is in truth an utter solitude. A poet such as William Wordsworth, perhaps one of our best loved English poets, wrote about the Lake District and the plight of small farmers and people who perhaps were living as workers on the land, who lost their livelihoods and had to leave. It brings home to us a sense of the loss that is also there when people have to sometimes uproot their families and leave lives behind them. Spoke to me of shepherds, dwellers in the valley, men whom I already loved, not verily for their own sakes, but for the fields and hills where was their occupation and abode.
So the question is, are we learning from past migrations and the impacts on the land and the people?
It's immensely important to try to think in the way that people who have travelled are thinking about where they've come from. It's very easy for us to try and recreate a sense of what people thought, but they're the ones who really know. The people who've travelled are the people who really know what it's like to actually leave behind you somewhere that was your home, somewhere that you had attachments to in all sorts of ways. And it's the smell of a place. It's the way something sounds. It's not just the way something looks. So there are all sorts of aspects of a place that can so easily be lost and only really recovered through people who are able to actually tell us about those experiences. If we forget the hardships that people suffered historically, it makes it more difficult for us to understand the situations that people face around the world now. Very often they're having to leave their homes because of conflict, because of poverty, because of just an inability to make a living and survive where they are. That kind of thing has happened in places previously. And literature, writing about place, can help us to remember that kind of those kinds of changes that affect people, families, and indeed whole communities.
Susan gives talks all over the world about looking at past migration through literature. She says it can help people to see a long perspective, as well as giving her insights into current impacts.
I think it helps people to think about the way their lives are, the way they connect with the places in which they live, but also with other people who live there and have lived there. But I think it's also important because it's important for me and it's important for people who work in universities to have that contact with the general public. It's not a one-way process of our research just helping them. You know, they really inform our understanding. I have learned so much from talking to people, talking to fishermen, talking to people who work in rural situations in cultures that I really don't know terribly well. I've travelled to Taiwan. I've been to Australia many times. North America a lot and traveled substantially in the American, from the Pacific Northwest right the way down into the American West, and met many people and talked with them about their experiences during that time.
Understanding migration and looking at the long view is Susan's work.
Promoting understanding is also the mission of another University of Essex academic.
I think when people travel, there are concerns about, you know, how our new anxieties as demographies change, as neighbourhoods change.
Ahmed Shaheed is himself a migrant from the Maldives.
He was a diplomat for the government, but was forced to leave after a coup.
Now Ahmed teaches about cultural diversity and human rights at the University of Essex, alongside a special UN role as a rapporteur, spreading knowledge and helping societies around the world bond with incomers.
So there is a need to learn more about the other, because it's often fear and ignorance that creates anger and prejudice that often drives discriminatory practices and violence. So I think it's very important at the present time we all work to ensure that people recognize the diversity is a blessing, and that we are able to know about each other better and learn about ways in which people around the world who are succeeding in accommodating diversity are doing that. So those where people are struggling can learn from that.
What about those who have faced intolerance in the past?
Faced hatred, violence, even extermination. How do they learn to live with that?
At the head of one of the rows, I find the grave of my father's father, my grandfather, Walter Lichtenstein. The sight catches me. Seeing his name in letters on a grave makes me suddenly transparent. My head spins, my limbs weaken.
I'm Jonathan Lichtenstein, and I teach theatre. I'm a professor of drama at Essex, and I write plays, and I've written a book called The Berlin Shadow, which used ideas from Greek tragedy in them. I'm the son of an immigrant father who escaped on the kinder transport from the Holocaust, and that provides you with a certain weight to deal with in your life. I wanted to set the record down for myself about what had happened, and really to think through what is it to think about, thinking through what do you do with the Holocaust if you're Jewish. And I think not just if you're Jewish, but for me, and I can't answer for anyone else, but all I could do was answer for me and my father. So my father and I went on a trip. We went to Berlin. We retraced this route he had escaped from on the kinder transport. We went to the station he had left from. I found out things about his sister. I found out things about his father. I found out his grandfather. I found out shops. I found loads of geographical things, places where he had lived. Oh, this is where I learned to ride a bike, he said, you know, as we were walking past this bit of a park. And I said, oh, this is where I used to live. Oh, this is where I was born. I say,
my father walks over and joins me, quietening at the sight of his father's grave, seemingly all of a sudden tranquil and even serene, his feet placed evenly apart on the ground, the weight of his body on the soles of his feet connected to the stabilising earth. I pass my father two of the stones I've been carrying in my pocket. I bought these from outside your house in Wales. I place two small stones on Walter's grave. My father places two.
And this kind of thing which began to happen was that we both kind of went into a really difficult silence. I mean, it was very hard for my father, and it was quite hard for me, but it was very hard to watch my dad suffer so much. Except that on the way home, he was much more relieved and cheered and happier. And my father had these terrible nightmares all his life So as a child, I grew up with him banging doors, getting up, cleaning, kind of fraught in the night. You know, he had nightmares, he'd shout out. And when he got home, although he was in his 80s, for the first time in his life, he could sleep. And so it seemed to me that what I was finding out was if you can possibly find a way of even beginning to kind of look at these things, it won't, and it doesn't crush you. It might crush you, that's the danger. But if it doesn't, then it will allow you some rest. And this links exactly to Greek tragedy, that somehow if you can look at what human condition is like, if you have plays which will show you what it's like, if you can have a device where you can empathetically connect with an audience, with an actor on stage who is feeling things which you can identify with, you can in some ways reach this thing called catharsis. It's rather like a shattering of the psyche, which is then has to be reassembled.
Trauma is a common feature connected with migration, but the numbers of people on the move in the world are going up.
According to the World Economic Forum, 3.5% of the world's population are now migrants. Here's Ahmed Shaheed on why that is.
Protracted conflicts keep on creating more displaced people, that creates more refugees, and more migration. Failing countries, that also creates more displacement, and therefore more refugees. And of course, you can look at things like the climate change, an impending situation where we can expect even more people to travel. And of course, you know, we talk about economic migrants. And of course, that is a significant number of people doing that as well. But again, that is related to unequal distribution of wealth, unequal, you know, growth trajectories in countries. People naturally, of course, seek better pastures when their own communities are not able to sustain them in a decent economic life.
Despite the trauma that's been connected with human migration in the past, Ahmed sees hope for the future.
Firstly, because he himself has found happiness after the migrant experience.
In my travels around the world, both as a diplomat and of course now as a UN reporter, and also as a person having to flee my own country. Throughout this journey, I've been very blessed to meet people who've been very generous, who've been very open to receiving people who were different, I suppose, to who they were. And so I really understand what it means for someone to be on flight and to you know, be a stranger in strange places and to be welcomed by them. So my journey has been a very happy one, and I think it can be happy for everybody. We just need to make sure that we invest enough in ensuring that people, you know, learn about the other. So I've been very focused on educational tools with regard to, you know, the classroom context, regard to how youth ought to learn from each other. My visit to Sri Lanka about 2 years back, you know, identified one of the reasons for such communal hatred was that students, young people, did not get to go to school with people of a different identity. They all went to their own pillarized school. So it wasn't until 18 plus or more that they actually got to spend time with someone of a different identity or different ethnic background. And by that time, it was often too late to dissolve the kind of stereotypes that had become embedded throughout their life. So these sorts of, if you like, you know, opportunities, guidance, these are used by many states to do the right thing, although, of course, many states also ignore many of these guidance. But I think working along these issues, talking to various stakeholders, working with society actors, building coalitions, this is a way forward, because these things can't be changed overnight. But we need to keep on pressing. And when we keep on pressing, all of us together, we do make a change. And that's what's encouraging all of us to keep doing what we're doing.
We do hope you've enjoyed Louder Than Words, the podcast from the University of Essex. This episode was about migration.
Do join us next time when we'll be shining a light on mental health.
What works, what needs to work better to support those facing mental health problems.
Thank you for listening. This was the Louder Than Words podcast from the Centre for Public and Policy Engagement at the University of Essex. You'll find links to the contributors and their work and books on the Centre's website.